News of five people being shot in a mass shooting anywhere in the U.S. used to be the kind of story that might stop you in your tracks, make you reflect on the state of gun violence in the country. But this past weekend saw four different shootings with five victims each. And if you didn't live in Tampa, Memphis, Chicago, or Houston, you might not have even heard they happened. According to the nonprofit Gun Violence Archive, the U.S. reached its 400th mass shooting of the year on Saturday. That's more mass shootings than were recorded in any year before 2018. We're on pace to set a new record by the end of 2023. The rising frequency of these tragedies can make them feel less and less shocking. We can even start to feel more numb to their impact. We've talked in the past about the politics of these issues, the public health angle on gun violence. Now we're getting a psychological perspective on this idea of becoming numb to tragic events. Our next guest researches this kind of emotional numbing and how we respond to difficult societal problems. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you started feeling more desensitized to news of mass shootings? Do some stories of tragedy still affect you more than others? How do you balance your emotional response with protecting your own mental health? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Paul Slovic is a professor of psychology at the University of Oregon, where he studies human judgment, decision-making, and the psychology of risk. He's also the founder and president of Decision Research, an international research group that looks at how we make complex and risky decisions. Paul, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Nice to be with you today.
Can you tell us a little bit about this idea of psychological or emotional numbness when it comes to tragedy? I think we have a concept that it can happen, but what does it look like in practice?
Well, we rely on our feelings to guide us in making all kinds of judgments and decisions through our day, and to as kind of a compass that guides our behavior as we navigate the day's issues. And these feelings.
Hi, Rich, Central Time.
Oops, sorry, we crossed a wire there. Paul, please go on.
Okay, so we trust our feelings to guide us in and influence our behavior. We also have science. We've learned how to create scientific ways of gathering data and analyzing it to help us make decisions about risky actions. But most of the time, we trust our feelings. And one of the things that we have learned through research, but it's also very evident when you look outside the laboratory at what's going on in the world, is that often we respond very strongly when an individual or a small number of people are at risk. But then when as the numbers get larger, we sort of lose the feeling. The information becomes, if there are numbers, we don't see the individuals beneath the surface of the numbers, and we don't react as strongly to that. We have a kind of a concise summary of this rather shocking way our brains process feelings of risk, and where we say, the more who die, the less we care. That's a form of psychic numbing, very strong reaction to the individual, but less and less reaction as more individuals become at risk.
And literally the difference between hearing about one tragedy and two people, if I understand a research you've, I think, worked on yourself, there's a drop off just going from one person to two people in a tragedy.
Remarkably, that surprised us. Not that we don't react to two, we do, but the feeling of concern one has when you see one person in danger, it's very strong. Going from no one to one is a huge difference. Then if there are two, you don't feel twice as concerned. You may feel more, but it's not a concern than with one, but not twice. Mm-hmm. Think, for example, about if I told you that there were five people in danger from some issue, and you think about that, and you'll be concerned. And I said, oh, wait a minute, I was wrong. There's six people. I bet that you won't feel any different thinking about six than about five, because that's how quickly our feelings kind of reach a ceiling, which is so high at one that it doesn't have a lot of room to grow. So it kind of flattens out. We become desensitized. But one other thing, it's even worse than this. Sometimes when the numbers are really large, it's not that we just don't react very differently when there's additions. It's that we actually react less. We say that our feelings kind of fade or collapse. Like if you hear about thousands or millions of people who are harmed or in danger from natural disasters or violence or whatever, they just become numbers, and you don't have any feelings at all towards them unless you stop and think carefully about the reality of what underlies those numbers.
I assume the answer to this isn't, we're just terrible people who don't care about large-scale tragedies. What is going on in our brains that enables us to, I guess, understand one tragedy but not really grasp the scale of a larger tragedy?
Well, I think that's a very good question. Basically, it was very adaptive when we lived in the Stone Age in caves, when we had to mostly react to things that were immediate, dangers in front of us, like a single individual who might be threatening us, or an animal or something like that, something in our immediate experience. So we're very sensitive to these kind of threats and react very strongly. Well, that same part of our brain that reacted that way is still present in our brains today, although we have now evolved the ability to think more abstractly, more analytically, to use evidence and science as in addition to our immediate intuitive feelings. The problem is that it's easier to rely on our feelings. It usually works to get us through our day, especially if our feelings have been honed and tuned by experience. We can trust them. And so it helps. It's very adaptive until it's not. And one of the ways that it's not is when there are more people in danger, where the numbers get big, then we can't comprehend or integrate the large numbers here. Our feelings have kind of a limit. They don't do arithmetic. Our feelings don't do arithmetic. They don't add. They don't multiply very well. We have to use the part of our brain that does the math and realize that if I tell you that there are six people at risk, that's one more important life than if there were five people. It's not that we can't do it. It's that the brain is lazy and it's easier to rely on our feelings, and our feelings don't do arithmetic.
We're talking to psychology professor Paul Slovic at the University of Oregon, looking at the idea of becoming numb to large-scale tragedies, including ongoing concerns about gun violence, incidents of mass and individual gun violence in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234, maybe with your experience as you see this in the news again and again over the years. How does that make you feel? Does it make you want to turn away? Understandable if so. Call 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a caller. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. First off, if you have a conscience, you can't turn away. You won't look away because you're still accountable. Number two, one is a tragedy, two or more is a statistic. I went to Wauwatosa West in the 90s. I graduated in 1998. When I was in middle school in eighth grade, a gentleman by the name of Leonard McDowell, and I use gentleman very loosely here, walked into Wauwatosa West and gunned down the associate principal, Dale Brightlow, in the hallway in the middle of school. And it was my friend's dad. He was a kind, generous man, and everybody has these people in their lives. One is far too many, because I know too many other people I graduated with, went to school with, where we have met and ran across paths across the rest of our lives, and this has continued to affect us. And it's deep. I mean, it's deep effect, and it just, it doesn't go away. The security, anything can happen at any time. We live in a random world. But we can stop some of this. We can curtail some of it, and we have to. It is an absolute imperative in my point of view.
Marcus, thank you so much for sharing that that difficult experience. And Paul, a lot there we could talk about from Marcus. First of all, the impact of a shooting, I think sometimes, again, we're statistics-driven, the number of people dead, maybe the number of people wounded. Marcus reminds us, it affects a lot more people.
Yes, and certainly you can see the trauma that Marcus experienced there, and that's very real, and that's what happens if you experience this, or you know people you care about or love who have experienced it. Then this is deeply disturbing, and it doesn't leave you. I mean, you're not relying on statistics; you're relying on the emotionality of what this means, and so that's And one has to think about this, for example, even if you're not a direct victim, like now because of so many shootings, you know, some people are saying, well, the way to deal with this is to, you know, to arm teachers, to put armed guards in the schools, and to continually drill the children as to how to protect themselves against an active shooting in the schools. Well, think about this. Most of these schools, there fortunately has not been a shooter, but we're already having them practice responding as though there were a shooter in the schools. Think about that sort of a secondhand trauma, which will likely color their view of the world and the people around them and the safety. Children are very vulnerable. They have a lot of fears, and we're drilling this into them. You know that you can't trust people around you because they might come to your school and shoot you. Then this is, even when it doesn't happen, it's traumatic. So I'm gonna agree with you that it's a problem. It needs to be managed. And we have managed some of these major problems in the past through sort of what Nicholas Kristof calls public health type measures. Like, for example, we brought down the harms from smoking through education and regulation. We've regulated traffic safety so that there's a lot fewer traffic accidents and deaths than there used to be through education, through design of the environment, through regulation. So I think we need to take that approach. I don't think we'll be able to get rid of guns, nor should we desire to get rid of all guns. We need to manage these in a sensible way.
Thanks again for the call, Marcus. We're talking to University of Oregon psychology professor Paul Slovic about the idea of psychic numbing, how we get desensitized over time to repeated tragedies like gun violence. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you find yourself feeling numb to news of mass shootings? Does the frequency of the tragedies make you feel less hopeful that we can prevent them? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Paul Slovic, psychology professor at the University of Oregon, who researches decision-making and risk. He's with us today to talk about how our brains respond to tragedies, including mass shootings, and how we can build up emotional and psychological numbness over time. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. We heard from Lisa. Lisa says, when one person is in danger, we feel like there's something we can do about it. When thousands of people are in danger, we feel like there's nothing we can do. And Paul, I think that's an important part of the story and your research, the idea of, you know, can we make a difference in the face of larger scale problems?
Absolutely. That's a very important observation. And it deals with the issue of efficacy. It's one thing to be aware of the problem, and if you feel that you can't do anything about it, well, then it makes sense to make yourself numb, to turn away from it, because why torture yourself worrying and fretting about things you can't control? So you turn your attention to things that maybe you can do something about. So the issue of efficacy, again, efficacy is another aspect of the way our feelings can deceive us, just like numbing is a way that our feelings deceive us about the magnitude of a problem. Our brains let information in that conveys feelings that may not be relevant. So let me back up here. We try to do something about a problem because first there's a need, and second because we feel effective doing it. And if our attention is called to the fact that we can only do a little bit on the problem, or we can't fix the problem, and there's a lot that we can't fix, that creates bad feelings, which our brain lets in to mingle with the good feelings about doing something useful, and it devalues the good feelings, and it doesn't feel as good to do something helpful because of the feelings, that bad feelings of what you can't do. So we get demotivated from doing what we can do because of what we can't do, which may be irrelevant. And so basically we have to appreciate that even if we can't fix a problem entirely, or we're only a small, a small drop in a large bucket, that drop may be very important. And we've got research that shows that even when people can really save a life, if they're shown other lives they can't save, then they don't do the help that they can do, and that's not rational. So we have to be aware of the fact that our minds deceive us, and not let that happen. And one way that we can actually be more effective, even if the problem is big, is by joining forces with organizations that are dedicated to the problem and can magnify our effect. You know, support these organizations with financially, support them by working for them or with them, by turning out for events that they put on, and supporting their political activity that is aimed at helping in this problem. So you can magnify your efforts and your efficacy by joining in with others.
Let's go back to our callers. Randy is with us in Madison. Randy, hi.
Good afternoon. Ironically, I was just composing a Facebook post about how the sheer volume of charges coming up against Donald Trump makes him less weighty. I think the volume decreases, the seriousness. And a few years ago, a photographer got a picture of a father and a daughter drowned trying to reach, I believe it was Italy. And suddenly people were talking about, oh, this is a crisis. Same thing, a photographer managed to get a picture of a DHS agent actually forcibly removing a child from their mothers.
Randy, I gotcha. The power of photography, Paul, I think you've also looked at.
Absolutely. Again, we're talking about feelings. So even though numbers are not good at stimulating our feelings, images, photos, testimony of people, these have powerful impacts. Very dramatic evidence of this that we studied a few years ago involved the war in Syria that started in 2011 when people started protesting against the government of Syria. The government started fought back by rather than listening to the protesters, killing the protesters, and that escalated. So 4 years later, there had been 250,000 Syrians who died in these battles in Syria, and millions fled as refugees. Well, we looked on Google for evidence of concern about this. You know, people searching under Syria refugees. There wasn't any, and that changed overnight with the photograph that went worldwide of the little boy on the beach who was trying to flee with his family from boat capsized, and the boy was washed up. A very shocking picture. And overnight, people started searching for Syria and refugees. But even more important, they started donating money to aid agencies. Overnight, for example, in Sweden, the Swedish Red Cross, which had taken in 150,000 Syrian refugees in 2015, there and set up a fund to care for them. That fund increased from about $8,000 a day to $430,000 overnight when that photograph came up. And it shows that how statistics of 250,000 deaths didn't make a difference, but that photo woke people up. And another interesting thing is that it lasted, but it didn't last forever. A month later, everything had kind of filtered down to where it was before. So when you see a dramatic photo like this, it does make it, wakes you up, engages you emotionally, makes you want to act, and it provides a window of opportunity when you are ready to do something. But that window of opportunity doesn't last forever. And the same thing with a school shooting. After the school shooting, people are engaged and they want to do all kinds of things. And then over time, it may fade. So you've got to act quickly when the emotion is still raw and motivating.
Randy, thanks for that call. Time for one more caller. Martha is with us in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Yeah, I think that this is a good discussion because these things can numb you or they can really make you angry, like I am about these school shootings, because they are mostly preventable. And if we didn't have cowards kowtowing to the gun industry, children would be safe and wouldn't have to go through this trauma.
Martha, thanks for the call. Paul, reacting with anger and I think calls to action as opposed to a numbing in the face of gun violence or other tragedies. In our last minute, your thoughts on what we do with our reactions?
Well, amen. I mean, anger is a powerful emotion, and I think we need to be angry about the way guns are used abusively in our society and take so many cause so much trauma and harm, different from anywhere else in the world, I think, in terms of the amount of violence like this. And it is not necessary. It can be greatly reduced, and we need to be angry enough to work politically to make it happen.
Martha, thanks for that call. And Paul, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Paul Slovic, professor of psychology at the University of Oregon, where he studies human judgment, decision-making, and the psychology of risk. He's also founder and president of Decision Research. That's an international research group that looks at how we make complex and risky decisions. He's with us today to talk about the idea of psychic numbing and how tragedies like gun violence start to feel less severe as they become more common.